This is a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine, where a portion of this interview will appear in print. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 43rd in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I am pleased to have with me today Christopher Hoff. Hi, Christopher.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Christopher Hoff, or Hoff as he prefers to be called, so I'll call you Hoff from now on, is a director of Cloud and Virtualization Solutions at Cisco. He's also been a chief security architect at Unisys, a chief architect, a CSO, and a CTO. And Hoff has a well-trafficked blog at www.rationalsurvivability.com/blog. He also has an alphabet soup of credentials and trains in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so I have to be careful about what I ask him. So without further ado, let's get started. At RSA 2009, the number one buzzword was cloud and cloud security. And pinning down cloud computing and cloud security by attending that show is kind of like trying to nail fog. So what is cloud computing anyway?
Well, there's fog, and then my favorite analogy of the goat rodeo. But I think they're both relatively accurate. So, you know, it's very interesting that question comes up so many times, and I've rehearsed the answer, depending on the audience, like a billion times it must be. And so what I've kind of arrived at is that there's two very interesting perspectives that one has to take when answering that question. And it's from the kind of the provider's perspective, the vendor community, those that offer cloud services, and then the consumer's perspective. Mm-hmm. And the reason I couch it that way is that from the perspective of a consumer, anything, any service, any company, any vendor, any technology that would otherwise allow them to take their content and their data and place it in the stewardship of somebody else these days is cloud. So from the consumer's perspective, you know, whether that's MobileMe, whether it's iTunes, it could be, even the Sidekick data storage that we saw a week ago in terms of...
Isn't it data lossage that they're doing?
Data lossage, yes.
Sorry, we'll lose your data forever. Don't worry.
That's right. Guaranteed for only $20 a month. But the point is, and, you know, that from their perspective, and anything to which you ultimately connect, usually using the internet, is cloud based. And on the vendor side, we apply all sorts of rules and logic that says, that's really not cloud because it doesn't satisfy, you know, these basic tenets. It doesn't have elasticity, doesn't have self-service, there's no dynamism, there's no, you know, so there's a technical answer and there's a non-technical answer. I think they're both right in terms of qualification. But ultimately, cloud is an operational model. It's a way of more efficiently, more effectively using computing resources. Could be managed by you or somebody else, but essentially stems on the ability to utilize our computing resources more efficiently and kind of pay-for-use model to do so. And it's a fantastic set of fodder for blogs, quite honestly.
There you go. Well, there's been an awful lot of hype around cloud stuff, including cloud security, and I guess that's one of the problems because there's so much hype it's hard to tell what's real and what's just baloney. In your opinion, what are the kind of the worst pieces of hype that need to be overcome?
Well, you know, not that I want to dwell on the Sidekick data lossage story again, but I think the notion that the clouds are impervious to failure, that somehow ultimately we have invented or introduced new technology or capabilities that solve a set of problems that we have been dealing with for quite some time in some automagical way. So a lot of interesting expectations are being set, and I think this is classically illustrated by Larry Ellison's rants on the topic of cloud, which are both humorous but in some cases realistic, which is, you know, the argument that there's nothing new, but at the same point, and we've been doing it for years, versus the notion that, you know, maybe the technological advances aren't that different, but how we plan to use it and how it's being operationalized is the differential. So from the perspective of the hype machine, certainly, as I referenced to the how consumers look at cloud, a year or 2 years ago, we didn't even have that word in our vocabulary
right.
from the perspective of
right.
a computing environment. So the branding elements and the marketing associated with what cloud is going to deliver versus what it delivers today as part of kind of a normal evolutionary step forward in the way in which we enjoy computing has just, you know, in the vendor scramble associated with making sure that you're included in the magic quadrant or whatever that might be, has really, really just fueled the fire in terms of making it very confusing, back to your question about definition of what is cloud and what can it deliver. Clearly, we have great illustrations of what cloud computing and its potential can offer. Amazon Web Services, services like you know, Google, Salesforce.com, the classical things that are held up as great examples.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all sorts of very interesting things that are going on with the development of people, corporations using private cloud capabilities, the extension of Web 2.0 and mashup. So, you know, I think in the long term, the hype gets outweighed by use cases and the realities of how people are using the technology and the operations. And it'll settle down like it always does.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, you invoke Gartner. We're sort of at the very top of the hype curve that they like to talk about. So the valley of, what is it, the valley of disillusionment is on its way. Should be here.
Yeah,
two, 3 months.
The chasm of despair, the trough of something.
Yeah,
yes, exactly.
Yeah. It isn't good,
I mean,
whatever it is.
That's true. I think I think it's just a matter of perspective. And, you know, we tend to lose a lot of perspective in terms of what has come before us.
Mm-hmm.
In many cases, every time we have an inflection point or a bit of a, you know, huge swing in disruptive innovation, and the way you know, I like to describe things in terms of cloud or any number of the times we've had a large computing inflection point, whether that's, you know, Web 2.0, if you want to call it that, Web 1.0, client server, you know, minis as a step down from mainframes. Every time we've had a new instance, a new way of operationalizing our computing resources, we've had this same sort of churn that takes place in the industry.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it ultimately smooths out, right? So it's kind of this notion of the punctuated theory, the theory of punctuated equilibrium.
You get a big giant swings. So maybe the computers will sprout wings. Yeah, would be good.
Well, that could be potentially useful, you know. But ultimately, you get these big, giant swings, and then in a classical dampened oscillation, it settles down over time, and everything looks the same again until we have another big swing. And
right, so, if we throw our computers a lot, maybe they'll develop wings faster.
That's right.
So let's turn to security a little bit. I really love your presentation entitled "The Frogs Who Desired a King," which can be found on the Rational Survivability blog. In that presentation, you discuss three varieties of cloud computing. What are those three levels? And then let's talk about security in all three of those.
So the three classical service models that relate to cloud, and these weren't defined by me. These have kind of come to the forefront in discussions and certainly have been made a little bit more concrete by the folks at NIST with the publication of their documents, so people are using the vocabulary, or known as the SPI model.
Mm-hmm.
Software as a service, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service.
Right.
Those three models are ways of describing, in my mind, especially as it relates to security, how you define, group, and draw lines in the sand of where the provider and the consumer of the provider's services, where their responsibilities end in terms of security, management, operations, etc. So, you know, it's a very useful way of essentially applying some definition to how people are offering service and how they are ultimately consumed.
Mm-hmm. So I sort of think of them as virtual hardware, virtual operating system, and virtual apps. I guess I haven't read the NIST stuff. But here's the problem. So I think we're not so bad at protecting hardware, not virtual hardware, but just plain old hardware. We're not so bad at that. We're pretty bad at protecting virtual operating systems, and we're really particularly bad at protecting virtual applications. So
and real ones, and real ones for that matter.
I know. So you know. So what's the deal? You know. So security maps really differently into these three parts. It strikes me.
It certainly can. And so in between the time I wrote the Frogs presentation and my latest one, which is interestingly titled too, we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. I wanted a way of relating the SPI model from a security or a technician's perspective, somebody who's been involved in networking or application security, to a set of models that they would identify with. And so what I generally tend to do is I try to, I'm very visual, so I like to draw pictures a lot. Mm-hmm. And I came up with a way of mapping some of the complexity of the model that I built with a community effort of saying, well, you know, if you're looking at infrastructure as a service, really when you map that to something you are familiar with, you'll see that, you know, infrastructure as a service is facilities, hardware, a layer of abstraction and core connectivity instead of APIs.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of infrastructure as a service. And then you put your stuff on top of that.
Right.
That could be, it could be virtualized, it doesn't have to be, but you put your stuff on top of that for your consumer. Platform as a service is essentially infrastructure as a service with a layer of integration and middleware that allows people to develop and build applications, usually hooked to a particular development environment or programming language on top of the infrastructure as a service layer. And then software as a service is all of that plus, you know, applications, data, content, metadata, and the way it's presented and managed. So the interesting point about the SPI model, when you map it to security and the comments you were making about, you know, the relative levels of security therein, is that the lower down the stack you go, from software as a service platform to infrastructure as a service, the more responsible you still are as a consumer for the security and management of the resources
right.
that are running in that
service. Because you're putting more stuff on top of the service.
That's right, and more specifically, the provider draws their line kind of lower and lower as it goes. So you take an infrastructure as a service provider like Amazon Web Services, who does a fantastic job of offering what ends up being, they provide, you know, the all the moving bits, a hypervisor, and then provide you a shell, an AMI, within which you can put your content operating systems and data. Mm-hmm. But where they draw the line from a security perspective is the hypervisor up, basically, right? They ensure that the operations of that environment work as advertised and are as secure as they can be to provide you service.
Right. And then they have the advantage of kind of being a grid underneath their hardware solution.
Right.
So you get scalability and all sorts of other stuff that may or may not be associated with cloud.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And I wrote a blog post about that the other day, where ultimately there's not a lot of variability in workload if what you're offering in that regard are fixed compute, you know, and memory configurations, right? You can get variability of the content within the AMI, within the packaging, but if I know what my fixed workload looks like based on small and medium and large instances of compute, then essentially as an operator, I'm providing one task, a grid-like task of offering compute and storage services.
Mm-hmm.
What you do with it is your business. But that's exactly right. So their security from that perspective is quite well defined. Now, if you go to the other end of the spectrum with software as a service, it's kind of they own the entire thing, soup to nuts, right? So you essentially at that point, with infrastructure as a service, you're building in security. With software as a service, you're essentially RFPing or contracting it in,
mm-hmm.
right? Because what is provided to you from a security perspective is what the provider builds into it. And then somewhere in the middle is this very interesting, I don't want to say no man's land, but platform as a service, especially as it relates to security, gets a little interesting because the development environment, the hooks that you have in the programming languages that enable you to develop your apps, then are tightly coupled, in one instance, to the platform. But how you secure, since you're writing the applications and you own the data, you know, maintaining and managing security as it relates to that model is kind of stuck in between. It's a shared cooperative approach, which is very interesting
mm-hmm.
when you're trying to balance that out. So when I look at talking about security and cloud, I try to abstract things and I separate them out into three classes of cloud anatomy, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one block that I classify as infrastructure, which everyone's familiar with. It's the kind of the cogs, the moving parts, the you know, routers, switches.
I always think of it as kind of a big pile of disk, just because that's easy to conceive of.
Yep. But it could be processor, memory.
Of course.
You know, it's anything we use: compute, network, and storage.
Yeah.
So that's the bottom. That's a foundational layer. At the very top is infrastructure, and infrastructure is apps, data, metadata, service delivery, service definition, and it's all of the things that essentially you would imagine. The content and services being that would be delivered, and stuck in the middle between infrastructure and infostructure, something I call metastructure, which is actually the glue and guts that holds those two things and/or allows them to be abstracted from one another. So that's anything from BGP, DNS, PKI, identity access management, IP and address management, things that essentially glue those two stacks together. Whether that's in a monolithic environment, traditional non-cloud environment, or a cloud environment. So right. Sorting those things out, mapping them back to that SPI model, and understanding, where we, what our options are from the perspective of securing those various blocks is the challenge. Especially when you look at the fact that if cloud is not a technology, but really an operational model, then you have to look at what that does to how it is you operationalize your security, and that's the part where things start to get a little, cloudy.
We'll be right back after this message. Hi, this is Gary McGraw, host of the Reality Check podcast with Gary McGraw. This podcast series is focused on practical questions centered on running large-scale software security initiatives. Reality Check targets experienced leaders working to solve software security problems every day. Reality Check is sponsored by Sigital and syndicated by CSO Magazine. For more, see www.sigital.com/realitycheck. So I like your infrastructure layer, and I want to bear with me for just a second. It strikes me that the infrastructure layer is where our digital assets are going to reside anyway, and that's the stuff we want to protect, right?
Yes, exactly.
Generally speaking. So I've heard many vacuous talks on cloud security that take this sort of security pizza box condominium approach to securing network traffic. Just say, oh yeah, cloud, right. Blah, 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 let's just secure all the network traffic. And right. And it really bothers me because I just, these guys, they didn't get it in the previous generation of stuff and they don't seem to get it still. But isn't understanding cloud security by discussing request response stuff in network traffic kind of like trying to understand the brain at the level of neurons?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's a problem we've suffered for a long time. You could just insert cloud as being the latest, set of discussions that we're having because it's an interesting way of visualizing how we're operationalizing our applications and our security models. The challenge we've had, I think, over time is I borrowed it from Andy Jake with the hamster sine wave of pain as it relates to security. I have this presentation, the slide of my presentation that shows kind of this sine wave approach. On the left hand axis of this axis is the models that we have, our investment strategy in terms of how we have operationalized security. It stems from host-centric, user-centric, information-centric, application-centric, and network-centric. Mm-hmm. And then the x-axis is time. And so as you go a long time, as speeds and feeds or the threat vectors change, we essentially migrate from strategy to strategy to strategy. Mm-hmm. What's very interesting, so for example, when speeds and feeds pick up and we get, we get 1 gigabit per second fast Ethernet or 10 gigabits per second fast Ethernet, we naturally start thinking, the network will be able to keep up. Well, keep up is different than visibility, is different than understanding state, is different than understanding content and data, right? So incrementally, the network is trying to get better about understanding or at least becoming more aware or intelligent of what's running over it. At the same point in time, the attack vectors, could care less about the network, and in many cases, when we implement encryption, the attacks themselves become obfuscated. So, we essentially say, we'll invest then more in the application since the portals to my data. Well, we then have to realize that in many cases, requires retooling of applications, investment in SDLC, maybe they put in web application firewalls, XML security gateways, expensive, costly, and break things. And they say, we should concentrate on the information. Well, great. Where is it? What is it? How do I classify it? How do I essentially assign policy to it? That's too hard. You know what? It's a monkey problem. We'll train the users. We know how that goes. And so they basically say, that's a losing proposition. We'll just put more and more agents and monitoring and crap onto the hosts. And then they realize, well, 37 agents each do a separate function, or even a big mega agent just essentially bogs things down. And so around and around we go.
And then you get your pizza box condominium.
Exactly. And now, what's interesting, if you imagine a sine wave, and then you invert that sine wave and map it kind of superimposed on top of the first one, what you'll notice is generally and almost exclusively as it relates to sets of disruptive innovation like client server, like Web 1.0, like Web 2.0, and now like cloud, every time we are at the kind of top of the sine wave, and let's say we're investing in network security, the disruptive innovation dictates that quite clearly the focus is actually 180-degree inversion or out of phase inversion of where we ought to be investing. So cloud is a perfect illustration. Here we are wanting to put more investment at time and energy into the network, for example, which is a valuable proposition, by the way, because the entire picture is important. But when we look at the ability to deploy controls in a cloud environment, pick infrastructure as a service, we actually find that in many cases, for example, if you wanted to deploy a web application firewall or an XML security gateway or some network-based control in Amazon Web Services environment where you don't, where the network is actually abstracted into the kind of software layer, you find that you actually are 180 degrees out of phase and your ability to deploy compensating controls is actually at the host level. And so we're always trying to play catch-up. Sometimes we meet in the middle, but then you get disrupted by a new threat vector, right? So all sorts of kind of forces go and dynamics go into understanding why it always looks like from a security perspective we are constantly playing catch-up. It's kind of almost by design, but more specifically, we kind of just say, well, then what we'll do is we'll do what we know what to do reasonably right. Well. You know, we'll deploy agents.
Spend money on
network,
pizza boxes.
Spend money on pizza boxes. So it's, you know, I think it's explainable. I think, however, what we're ultimately waiting for, what we need to drive to is a security focused inflection point. But unfortunately, and we go back to those two perspectives, the consumer versus the provider, consumers, they basically, you know, and I don't mean that from just a consumer of service, not just a consumer. But consumers see security and the application thereof as an inverse function of convenience, and ultimately it's an insurance purchase, right? Mm-hmm. So if it means spending money or making things more difficult, that's going to be a problem for us, and it has been historically over time, unfortunately.
So. Right. So explain the confusion between security stuff, like, say, cryptographic functionality available through the cloud, and security as a system property.
Hang on, I need to consult my Swami. Wow, that was a deep question.
It's not really that deep. I mean, it's your classic confusion. The way I put it in software security is there are some people who think that software security is security software, but
it
isn't.
Got it. No, I mean, well, so for me, security is an enterprise architecture concern. It ultimately is something that I would love to see considered as part of the design process. We've all heard the bake it in versus bolt it on approach, and incrementally over time, we're slowly getting better as large companies are starting to show that you can build SDLC into product development, and we'll never be perfect. But I just think that from a philosophical perspective, we sort of assume and have always assumed that people will do the right thing. From a developer perspective, especially from where we are with AppSec and WebAppSec, I'd say we certainly the awareness has been raised, but when it comes down to, and it's not fair to necessarily single out application security, any enterprise architecture in general, that, you know, time to market and delivery just trumps our capability, desire, wants, and needs, and ultimately budgets to get stuff done as a balance of security versus convenience.
I think that some of the work we've done with the BSIM is can counter that thinking a little bit, just because it's not necessarily the case that those two things are orthogonal. It turns out sometimes if you're doing a good job with building security in, it turns out to be cheaper, not only in the long run, but also in the short run. You just have to be smart about it.
Yeah, and I think it's a cultural element, right? I mean, ultimately, if it's tracked and measured, and ultimately, you know, folks understand what building things securely up front means, and how ultimately in the long term this can be a way of avoiding problems that will cost money, cost time, cost you potentially your job. Mm-hmm. It's a valuable thing, and you know, there's so many interesting competing opinions on kind of that old IBM story of, you know, do it now, it's 1x the cost, do it after it's released to production, 60x the cost, or whatever
that
was.
Right.
But I think that, you know, the biggest problem we have when going back to the question you asked about the kind of system design pattern versus kind of this bolt-on approach of more pizza boxes, you know, this is not just an app developer's problem. It's not just a network admin's problem or security problem. I think we're just still so fragmented from the perspective of understanding how these things interrelate to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so going back to that model, the infrastructure, when a developer, and this is starting to change a little bit in my conversations with large companies, but developers, you know, they have an IP, they talk to a socket, they spew stuff out on the network, and they do what they do. The network guys see stuff appear on their network, and they do what they do, and the security guys kind of sit in between and try to understand what each of them are doing. And what's very interesting about that is that the infrastructure, you know, I'm actually, you made a comment before where we do reasonably well in understanding, I mean, we have a reasonable understanding of the things we need to fix in application security.
Right.
We have a reasonable understanding of the things we need to fix in infrastructure security. What's terrifying to me is actually the bit in the middle, the metastructure pieces, wherein the protocols, the glue that holds those two layers together that could be ultimately a way of ensuring that we fill gaps that appear at either layer, is for the most part completely ignored. So things like BGP, things like DNS, things like identity and access management, problems that regardless of how the flip-flop of security investment over time has played out,
mm-hmm.
and the disruptive innovation, are constant, you know, they're essentially constant problems that aren't addressed because the cracks that show in these things, unless they're brought to light with kind of really, really visible potential impact in news stories and coverage and talks at security conferences, just get ignored. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Vin Cerf at our InterCloud working group.
You know, he once shot me with a fake gun. It was good.
Well, a fake gun.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a long story. I don't have time for
that. That's a lack of commitment on his part. That's I think it just points out. Actually, this relates very well to my point. No, but ultimately, we're talking about while IP and all the protocols that have hung off of it, you know, ultimately have scaled amazingly well. You know, really, what this we are starting to show, you know, very large signs of stress and cracks in the way in which these protocols, given how we're stretching trust boundaries, how we define it in the first place, how we're dealing with things like the reparamerization and gracefully losing control, expecting that the apps and the infrastructure will rely on some magic in the middle to make our pain go away, you know, this is a huge problem, and
right.
It's actually the focus of my next prezo, because it, you know, the reliance is kind of stacked turtle analogy. Over time,
yeah, it's turtles all the way down. Yeah,
turtles all the way down. So, you know, and that's so for me, you know, when I look at the relative investment strategies for I'd like to see things, I think, you know, we're doing a much better job with at the application layer than we were 5 years ago. I think that it's not perfect, certainly, but awareness has been raised. People are understanding that, you know what, guys, we still have why do we still have buffer overflows? Why is SQL injection still a problem? You know, you look at the OS top 10, why are these things that constantly never disappear off that list still a problem? You should go fix those.
Right.
And the same thing from a network architecture perspective, you know, looking at you know, looking at where we are in terms of understanding where we have blind spots and how we get the network more aware and more intelligent as it relates to the things that are running over and allow for common telemetry between infrastructure and metastructure and infrastructure, people are starting to pay attention to it. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I hope, well, I have great faith that your next Prezo will be as cool as some of your other ones. And I got to tell all you Silver Bullet listeners out there to go check out the blog and check out these colorful and yet full of content presentations. One last question. You and I share a hankering for good rum. And my favorite is Mount Gay Extra Old. What's yours?
Ron Zacapa Centenario. So it's a 23-year-old rum. And it's, well, that and Zaya, it's kind of a tie between them. But ultimately, Ron Zacapa is a fantastic rum. It's actually Guatemalan, and not too many people know about it. But that would be my favorite, I think.
I think about 6,000 more know about it now. Thanks much. It's been an interesting conversation.
Thanks, guys.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Inform IT. The September-October 2009 issue of IEEE S&P is a special issue on securing DNS. The issue also looks at the NSA's wiretapping behavior under the Warrantless Wiretapping Program. Subscribe today at www.computer.org/security. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.